The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sunday, Tuesday afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. We got a lot coming your way today. Vince, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jimmy. How you doing?
Doing well. We'll talk a little bit more about the interview that was made available for a Tennessee guard from Uruguay. But we've got Ron Higgins is going to join us at 4:05. There are a couple of things we want to talk to Ron about. First off, why was LSU punished as significantly as it was? And why didn't LSU just tell the players that took money from Odell Beckham to give it back? I'm curious about that. We'll see what he says on that. We're also going to have Joe Fisher. Vanderbilt's had to postpone a couple of games. They've got so many people in quarantine, nobody can count how many there are. We'll get Joe Fisher's take on Vanderbilt's season. We're going to bring you some comments from John Chavis, who was at the quarterback club yesterday. Jay Graham, Tennessee running backs coach, was joining the quarterback club by Zoom. We've got more comments from Rick Barnes, Kelly Harper, and who knows what else we can work in. But we've got a lot coming your way today in regard to that. So we'll go ahead and jump to our news and notes, and they're brought to you by the good folks at Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. Lane Kiffin was fined $25,000 by the SEC office for retweeting a criticism of SEC officials. I don't know if Lane got the memo on that, but you're not supposed to do that. But then the SEC admitted that the replay official should have stopped for further review. Now, the word was, and it was said during the broadcast, the replay official did look at it and decided, okay, it's going to stand. But what we did, at least what I didn't know, was that because he didn't go to a stoppage for review, according to the SEC, he never saw the slow motion review. Boy, that blows my mind. So, yeah, no wonder Lane Kiffin was ticked, and no wonder the SEC's come out to explain that. Vince, I'm surprised by that. That a replay official would go in that direction and not even look at a slow motion recap review.
Yeah, it's not like the ball was never close to anybody to where there's no reason to take a look at it. But when it's that close, you got the kicking team reacting like they are, and it's so close. Sometimes you do need the slow motion, and you can think that maybe he didn't touch it, but man, if you don't, like we talked about with Gerald Hodges yesterday, if you don't, you only, depending on the time, you get a certain amount of views of it. And if you need more, then you stop play, and then you get additional views on it. And for that situation, the way everybody reacted to not look at a slow motion that they didn't have time for or decided not to ask for, I don't know. But that's a critical error. And Lane Kiffin, in his press conference yesterday, very interesting the way he reacted to it. He said he was not allowed to say what they told him, what the SEC office told him, but he said, I wish our team and our fans could hear what they told me. And maybe he was talking about the slow motion portion of it, or maybe he was talking about something else. It was a very interesting press conference without him actually saying what the league told him that he came out and said.
Because they could have very well told him, hey, we missed this one. There's evidence that it touched that guy's finger. When I watched it again and I went super slow motion on it, I did see his finger bend backward.
Exactly.
And that's not a voluntary motion.
Right.
So
winds aren't that strong to bend your fingers.
No,
back.
They couldn't even blow my pinky. So, yeah, I do think in retrospect, I think they missed that call. But that's very unfortunate. Ole Miss was up by one, would have been up by, provided they made the extra point, by eight. Well, who knows? They might have gone for two. You know, if they were in the NFL, I guess they might have. All right, a few other notes out there. We'll touch on a couple of them with Tennessee. So Tennessee is in the running for a really good defensive lineman. who is going to make his decision on Friday. His name is Tyrion Ingram Dawkins. He's out of Gaffney, South Carolina. He's going to announce Friday between Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, the number one player in the state of South Carolina, the number five defensive tackle in the country, the number 86 prospect. He then recently, in addition to those four, he added Jackson State to his list because of Deion Sanders. The Biletnikoff Award has added John Mechie to its receiver list, the receiver from Alabama. Keon Green, the Lady Vols transfer from Liberty, is listed as a number 15 ESPN newcomer list for impact players. She's 6'1". She averaged 13.9 points, 7.5 rebounds last year, shot 59% from the field. 3 years ago, she was the Big South Player of the Year. Then she had injury that made her sit out a year, but she is considered an impact player for Tennessee. We'll see how she performs. A Fulton linebacker, Deshaun Page, committing to Mississippi State. Now, Deshaun likes to put a different page in his history book. He committed a while back to Kansas State. He'd also been committed to another school, but now he has settled in on Mississippi State. He went to East Mississippi Community College. He's rated the number one junior college inside linebacker in the country. So we'll see how he does, but good for him headed to Mississippi State. All right, want to touch on a few things Santiago Viscovi said. He is the point guard for Tennessee from Uruguay. Had an interesting story about just having to hurry back to Uruguay because they were closing the borders. He was just kind of on a trip to, I guess it was North Carolina, one of the two, 5 hours away.
South Carolina.
Yeah. South Carolina with John Fulkerson, and then they had to rush back. He had to catch a flight and get back. He said that in Uruguay they only had 60 COVID cases. He said it was safer there than anywhere else in the world. He was playing 3 to 4 pickup games a week. He was working out with a fitness with a trainer, strength and conditioning. He worked on his shooting. He lost some weight to improve his quickness so that he can guard quicker guards. He also said, though, that he was eager to get back with his teammates, even though he was very safe in Uruguay. He said that the practices at Tennessee have been really competitive with these newcomers coming in. He also said that when he had joined Tennessee in January, that the speed of the game and the athleticism of the opponent surprised him the most, but he said he is going to try to play faster. He also said he has a better understanding of what Coach Rick Barnes wants him to do, and he's more comfortable running the offense. He's very high on guard Victor Bailey. Quote, "I think Victor is definitely a big surprise. He will be a big game changer for us." Viscovi also said Keon Johnson's super athletic, is quick, strong, and can shoot. He said Jaden Springer is really talented and athletic and has really good instincts. And he said Corey Walker can shoot and crash the boards. Viscovi also likes E.J. Anasicki. He said E.J. is a unit. You cannot stop him. If he's going to the rim, I'd rather move to the side rather than stay in front of him. He's super strong. So I asked him, well, if you moved out of the way of Anasicki, what would Rick Barnes say? He said, "Oh, I was making a joke." He said, "But if I did get out of the way, Rick Barnes would call him soft." So, yeah. Also, I asked Santiago, "Are you a better shooter or a better passer?" He said he considers himself a mix of both, but he enjoys getting an assist more than he gets a three. He also said that he's comfortable playing point guard, and he said he hasn't talked to his teammates about Tennessee's high preseason ranking. But he said he tries not to think about it because it might bring more pressure on us than is needed. Those are some of the things Viscovi said. All right, a few other notes out there. Arizona's been hit with 9 violations. 5 are at level 1. The Board of Regents met yesterday to discuss this. They are the 8th school to get a notice of allegations from the NCAA based off the FBI probe. Kansas, Louisville, NC State, Oklahoma State, South Carolina, TCU, and USC are the others. Alabama, Auburn, and Creighton were under investigation, but they have not confirmed that they have received a notice of allegation. Arizona also was hit with lack of institutional control, failure to maintain, and lack of head coach control, head coach Sean Miller. The NCAA staff also said that LSU coach Will Wade arranged for or offered impermissible payments to at least 11 potential recruits and others around him. Help me out here, Vince. How does he still have a job?
When you were saying that, I was wondering the same thing to myself. I can't tell you, especially when the NCAA is coming out. It's not like these are just reports that LSU can say not true and just deny. And if these are NCAA findings on top of all the other stuff that has come out, it really is hard to explain why he's still in that gig.
Yeah. Of course, I wonder how Sean Miller's still at Arizona as well.
True.
So,
true, too.
All right. Mohegan Sun, that is in Connecticut. They're looking at trying to have 30 men and women teams in a bubble situation. They would play up to 7 games. I inquired about this and was told that with Tennessee, is Tennessee involved? I was told anything's possible. So we'll see if Tennessee might end up at the Mohegan Sun playing in one of those events. All right, a few other notes. Kentucky in basketball, they get a former Louisville commit, Bryce Hopkins. He's a number 5 rated small forward, the number 32 overall player. All right, here's one that's pretty interesting. So at Wisconsin, their quarterback, Jake Cohen, at the start of the year was injured. He's out for the season. They start a redshirt freshman named Graham Mertz. He completes, 20 out of 21 passes, 4 touchdowns. He's brilliant in the game against Illinois. He tests positive for COVID. And guess what? So does the backup, Chase Wolf. They're now down to their 4th-team quarterback. And in the Big Ten, when you get COVID, you got to sit for 21 days. So that has put the Badgers in a world of hurt right there with that situation. Also, as far as some bowl projections, IFC ESPN has projected Tennessee in the Liberty Bowl against Iowa State. And there was another projection that Tennessee would be in the Music City Bowl against Penn State. Those are a couple of projections that are out there. We'll go over some of the other bowl projections a little bit later. All right. As far as a couple of other notes, this is kind of unique. So where is game day from ESPN going to be November the 14th? At the Masters. They're going to Augusta National. They're going to do the show from there at the par 3 course. Okay. And then the Masters is coming right behind that. That's interesting. I'd like that gig. Also, the Masters is adjusting their format because of the shorter days with less daylight. They're going to go with tee times on number 1 and number 10, and they're going to have threesomes. And they will also not have the par 3 contest. So while we're on golf, Tennessee's golf team, they're in 6th place at the Vanderbilt Legends course. They are 8-under. They shot 8-under par the first day. They came back with another 8-under. They're 16-under par, and they're tied for 6. The leader, Vanderbilt's 32-under par. That's ridiculous how good that is.
Wow.
But the leaders for Tennessee are Bryce Lewis and Spencer Cross, each at 4-under par. Braden Garrison had the best round of the day yesterday, is 67. Cross has back-to-back 69. So that's an update on where Tennessee stands in golf. And as far as football, NFL last night, you had the Rams beating the Bears. The Rams now 5-2. Bears are 5-2. Rams defense was outstanding. They harassed Nick Foles most of the night, did a really good job. Heck, one of the heroes of the game was Johnny Hecht, the punter for the Rams. He had 5 punts all down inside the 10, and I think 3 of them might have been down inside the 5. And I had missed this the other day. Vince, you might have seen this, but the Steelers cutting Dustin Colquitt. He'd averaged 43.1 yards. His net was only 37.2. And Dustin, who's 38 and just got a Super Bowl ring, was cut by the Steelers, where his dad won a couple of Super Bowl rings putting for Pittsburgh.
Right. And Mike Tomlin had said that his punting was not up to snuff, was Tomlin's quote. And it was his lowest average at 43.1, lowest average since his rookie season. So, it's tough, and it's not often that you don't have both of the Colquitt brothers punting in the NFL. It started in the week 1. Well, no, because Dustin was. His brother was signed just before the season started, so there wasn't any gap because his brother he's still with the Minnesota Vikings, and
yeah,
Dustin was signed. Britton was with the Vikings, and Dustin was signed, I think, just before the opener. So there wasn't any gap where they both weren't punting in the NFL until he was recently released.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate there, but hopefully he'll land somewhere else if he wants to continue to play. Also with a couple of other notes out there, and I tell you what, and I thought of Jeremy Pruitt when I saw this. We didn't talk about this, but so Seattle's playing on Sunday night, and they throw an interception. Buda Baker picks it off, and he's headed toward the for Arizona, and he's going to score. And DK Metcalf ran, they said, 108 yards, tracked him down, got to 22 miles an hour, and tackled him on like the 7-yard line, and then Arizona did not score a point. And I thought about that's the kind of effort that Jeremy Pruitt's looking for when his offense throws an interception, Vince.
Absolutely, Jimmy. And don't think that that already hasn't been used by many coaches around the country, mm-hmm. probably even beyond just football coaches, to display you can have elite talent and still give elite effort. And you don't have to have any special talent to give that kind of effort. For a guy that size, a star like he is in the making, to sell out like that, I mean, absolutely brilliant and something that everybody in coaching is utilizing and should in a lot of arenas.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a golf note I overlooked, sorry. Former Tennessee golfer Ross McGowan, who played 2002 to 2005, he's from England. He won on the European Tour. He won the Italian Open. He holed out from a bunker on number 16. He birdied number 18. He won by one. That's his first win in 11 years on the European Tour. His last win was in 2009, the Madrid Masters. So congratulations to Ross McGowan. And then Bryson DeChambeau claimed to hit a 402-yard drive with a clubhead speed of 215 miles per hour. Okay, and I say claims because I don't know if there's proof of it. But that's just ridiculous. I mean, he's trying to change the game, and he might. If he has success or continued success doing that, I wonder if we'll see others continue to try to swing from the heels and just try to rip everything. But that's what he's doing. And his theory is it's almost like I'd rather be in the rough from 80 yards than be in the fairway from 180 yards. That's kind of what his mindset is right now. To a certain degree, so far, it has worked. All right. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some more from the NFL. We've got a couple of other notes regarding the World Series, so we'll talk about that. Game 6 is tonight, and a little bit later in the show, we'll have you comments from John Chavis, from Rick Barnes as well, and then Ron Higgins joining us at 4:05, Joe Fisher at 5:05. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Heim, Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
99.1, the Sports Animal. Just because your workday is boring doesn't mean your radio station has to be.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. Just seen some news. It's a little bit unsettling and troubling for Tennessee fans, for Tennessee track fans in particular. Christian Coleman, who is a world 100-meter champion, has been banned for 2 years over missing doping tests. That means he cannot compete in the Olympics. The U.S. sprinter was provisionally suspended in June for missing 3 doping tests. So he has been banned for 2 years, and he has lost his chance to succeed. Usain Bolt is the fastest man in the Olympic Games. I don't understand. Let's see. Coleman missed 2 visits by sample collection officials and failed to file correct information on another occasion, all in 2019, the year he won his first world title. Athletes face a 2-year ban if they have 3 violations in a 12-month period. Vince, that's quite a blow for somebody that had a chance to win a gold medal in what many look to be as perhaps the premier track event in the world.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jimmy. I don't understand when it's emphasized and so mandatory in the sport how you miss those tests and not get the information back. Look, it's very difficult in MMA as well, especially if you've already had any sort of suspension prior to. So they random test you and they track where you're at and things like that. So there are complications to it that make it really difficult for the athlete. However, if that's what you are doing and that is your life, you have to work around it and put up with it and make sure you do those things because they are a requirement. It is difficult for those athletes, but I just don't get why you miss them knowing what the ramifications are.
I don't know if he feels that it's not his obligation to make himself available all the time or his whereabouts. I don't know all of the ins and outs of that. But the I will say this, the Athletics Integrity Unit, the judging panel, also said in their statement the decision may be appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So I guess there's still a possibility for Coleman, who's 24. He was provisionally suspended from competition since May.
I'm sorry, let me say one other quick thing on that. Just talking to MMA athletes in the UFC and how they have to deal with it. If they try to track you or find out where you're at and say you don't get back to them, then that's a violation to them. Now, I don't know with that organization just how many strikes you get before, you know, they consider you to get to the ban stage. I don't know if it's the same thing. But just if your phone is off or you're a bad cell, you could be in a bad cell area and they want to know where you at that time, that they have that kind of standards in mixed martial arts. And I'm guessing internationally too, it's probably very difficult and inconvenient for the athletes too. So it could have been something very incidental, or maybe multiple times of being, just innocent type of, accidents like that where you couldn't report or they couldn't get in touch with you. So I'd like to know more about it before you just totally crush them. But it still is head scratching how it happens.
A couple of more details on this. The judges said there was no suggestion Coleman ever took a banned substance. So this is all about missing, but according to the judges, the evidence indicated a complete failure to comply with the rules by the athlete. Coleman had previously wrote in his blog that his third and decisive whereabouts failure, December the 9th of last year, occurred when drug testers showed up at his residence while he was Christmas shopping. Yeah. Elite athletes are required to fill out the whereabouts form to make it possible for anti-doping authorities to carry out surprise testing outside of competition.
Wow. It's kind of what I was alluding to. I mean, they could just show up, and if you're not there, you're in violation, and then I just don't know what the standards are, you know, if they do that three times, if that's where they can ban you, or if they go if it goes to a committee after a certain amount of times where you're not available to them. It's very hard on those athletes.
Three seems to be the magic number in this article I'm reading. Okay. So, wow. That's tough. You know, this is but we'll see. He's got a chance to appeal, according to the article that I just read. All right. When we come back, we'll have more. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our first caller. Jim, you're on Sports Talk.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
You know, I usually don't call with the same topic 2 days in a row, but I'm going to make an exception today because I still want to talk about the situation down at Ole Miss with this botched call.
Yeah.
I know the SEC in their rules, whatever, say that every play is reviewed, and in some plays will go to further review. But the problem had with that terminology in terms of every play is reviewed, I think a review connotates what they do when they stop play. There they do a formal review or examination and spend a minute and a half, 2 minutes, 3 minutes looking at it. I think the official up in the booth watches every play. I think he sees every play. But nowadays, particularly if you've got teams running speed offenses, and they're at the line of scrimmage in 20 seconds or 30 seconds, I think it's hard to, quote, do a review of every single play. Now, obviously, he didn't review this play because it should have went, you know, to a formal review afterward, which is what the SEC is admitting that he did not do, and I don't understand that at all. Do you think that most fans consider a review only when they stop play? Because I wonder how many fans are making the distinction that the SEC says every play is reviewed and then some go to further review. I think a lot of fans say if they don't stop play, it's not reviewed.
Well,
what do you think?
I think you're probably right, but I think that they need to get educated on it. I do. I don't have a problem with that. And remember, a lot of the plays that are stopped for review are because the official in the booth saw something that triggered a question as to whether they got the call right.
Right.
So that's then he stops it based on maybe watching two or three cuts of it before the next snap. Now, you're right about the hurry up, and that's something that Vince asked Gerald Hodges about. That's been a topic about having to deal with that. But I don't think it's complicated. I don't have any issue with that. Now, I understand that they're reviewing it, they're taking a look at it, and they could see something right away that tells them there's no reason to stop it. And I'm okay with it. I may, you know, it sounds like you're not, but I'm okay with that.
I'm just only questioning the word review because to me a review connotates maybe something more than they can do in that, during that short period of time. I'm not saying that no play gets that first review. I'm not saying that. But I just wonder if you think people need to be educated. I read two stories today about the SEC's reversal. And the two writers said there was no review of the play. Well, there was
That's
a review
fault.
Of the play, wasn't there?
Yeah, they reviewed the guy in the booth, from what I understand, and based on the release, he looked at it. And, was said during the broadcast. He looked at it a couple of times and did not feel there was enough evidence to overturn anything. But the error he made was he should have taken a slow-motion look at it.
Yep.
Right? So that's what he
screwed
stopped.
Up. Yeah. Vince, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, Jim, I think to what you're getting at is we've mixed and blended the terminology of rewatching plays before or whether to determine whether or not to stop play, that versus instant replay. So review is being – the word review is being used to replace instant replay, which is what the process is of stopping play and then going to the booth to look over the play and then make a determination. So I think that's where it gets a little bit confusing, and a lot of people are probably guilty of just calling instant replay review, but they do review or slash rewatch every play. And as Gerald pointed out yesterday, sometimes they have more time in dead balls, like you would think that situation. They have time to look at four or five replays versus rewatch them four or five times to determine whether to stop play. Or if you're going with the fast-paced tempo offenses like you were talking about, you know, sometimes they may only get to watch it once or twice again. And then he even said sometimes that even triggers them to pause it more frequently because they know teams are sometimes intentionally running up to the line of scrimmage to do it. So that almost raises a red flag when you're trying to do that kind of thing.
Can you guys give any plausible explanation why a replay official would, as close as that was and as crucial as that was, because it meant a touchdown or not, would not stop play to take a good, thorough look at it? Because I can't think of that. I know Tom Hart, after Auburn got up to the line to run the next play, he was incredulous. He said, they're not going to take a look at it. He was going bonkers. Can you think of any plausible reason why an official would not stop play to look at it?
No. And I don't think it's a good reason to say that he had looked at three or four replays or reviews and didn't see enough evidence to stop it. But that was too close. I would not be able to buy that explanation. I think he made a mistake, and the SEC is – so does the SEC. Yeah.
So is the SEC going to get the $25,000 in pennies?
maybe.
Oh, man.
I'll tell you, though,
I said it yesterday. I wonder if you know, Auburn's got photos of somebody down here because they could. Now, I don't know if Auburn would have lost or not. It would have given Ole Miss an 8-point lead, you know, making the kick, still with about 5 minutes to go. Obviously, it would have improved their chance, would have improved Ole Miss' chances to win. But
now,
Auburn could be 1-4 at this point.
Jim, don't you know that if Ole Miss had a 7-point lead, they were going for two? Like the Texans?
I would think, you know.
Come on now.
Well, Lane Kiffin, yes. Yes. Pruitt, no. Lane Kiffin, yes. But Auburn could be 1-4. Isn't that amazing? Amazing. Yeah. Well, guys,
lucky.
I appreciate it. The next time I talk to you, I'll talk about something else.
Well, there may be another call next week for you to chime in on.
I hope it ain't against – well, it won't be against Tennessee next week, but I hope the next one doesn't hurt Tennessee. We've had too many of those in the past.
Thank
guys,
you, Jim.
I appreciate it. Hey,
appreciate
thanks for
it.
Bearing with me. You guys have a good afternoon.
Yeah. And Vince, a lot of times I will – to a certain degree, defend officials because I know how hard the job is. I can't defend this. I don't get that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Other than maybe they, you know, weren't paying attention or something. But then you also have going into a dead ball. You have the opportunity, if you missed it initially, to determine whether it was close. You're supposed to rewatch everything, right? And then you say, ooh, wait a minute, this is kind of close. Let's look at this a few more times. Why would you not take a slow motion view? I don't know. Lane Kiffin referenced this video at the beginning. Lane Kiffin said, I really wish our players, for our fans, they could hear what I was just told they deserve to. And then at the very end, Jimmy, and you watch the video, you know this too.
Yeah.
He said, first of all, he said he took a five-minute power yoga class to chill out before he met with the media. And then he said, you know what I wish? I really wish when you guys asked me about personnel decisions and plays and things like that, I could tell you and respond and just say, well, that's personal. I can't talk about it. Which made it seem like he was, without saying that's what he was told, he was inferring that that's what he was told. Can you imagine if the league said, well, it's personal. We can't tell you why they didn't take a look at it. I mean, that – and because he's just still enraged and just beside himself at how this was botched by the league.
Yeah, and he certainly has a right to be based on that situation. But I don't get it either. It's really hard to explain – how that would have occurred. And here's the other thing, too. We will never know if that replay official is suspended.
Right.
Did find out a few years ago that basketball official for the LSU-Tennessee game, I found out he was suspended, and I was able to confirm it and report it. But that's rare.
And, Jimmy, in a weird way, Lane Kiffin pushing this issue – at least we got something from the SEC. They normally don't put out statements when there's a missed call.
Right.
And much less explain themselves. But because they had to suspend Lane Kiffin and it got to that point and it really became an even bigger story, they felt the need to sort of explain what had happened. But yet the bigger part of their release is, well, Mr. Kiffin violated policy. Here's our extensive policy on talking bad about our officials, But then that was the extent of their transparency. And if you had more transparency, you wouldn't have the conspiracy theories that come out when they're botched calls. If they're missed, then deal with it, be upfront about it, be transparent about it. And I think people would have an easier time to digest it. But that's not what we get from the league. And honestly, it's not what we get from a lot of leagues around college athletics.
I'm going to explain a conversation I had with Steve Shaw when we come back. In regard to exactly what you are talking about. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Here at The Sports Animal, we never really grew up. We just learn how to act in public, most of the time.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. We have very little time left. I'm going to try to squeeze in Tim. Tim, you're on Sports Talk.
Hey, good afternoon, Jimmy. How you guys today, okay?
We're doing fine.
Hey, I want to jump in right quick. I didn't get a chance yesterday to get on, but I want to jump on and just get your take. I also wanted to let you know that I found out where my 7-foot, 400-pound lineman went to school now. He is at Portland State, so I actually found him finally.
Oh,
so
okay.
Asked him the other day. He's still... He's at 410 now, so he's back over 400 pounds. So I'm not sure if he just didn't get away from McDonald's or what. So I didn't know. Just wanted to say, is there any more? Have you heard any of the things rolling around about Maurer wanting to jump on the transfer portal? Have you heard anything about that anymore? I know last week there was some talk about it online somewhere, and I just wanted to see if you'd heard anything or not.
No, and until somebody were to do something like that, I'm not going to report that. Initial report was incorrect.
Okay.
And so, no, I don't know. I mean, you could sit there and speculate on that kind of stuff with about a third of the players. So
sure. Okay.
I don't feel comfortable going that direction. And I have not heard that he plans to transfer, but
I'd seen a report, and I wanted to see if you had seen it or had heard that report or not. I just wanted to get your take on it. And Vince, I wanted to throw this out to you also. I wanted to say that I do like the MMA show that you do on Thursdays.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. We have fun doing
it. And I wanted to also ask you, I know that I like all the MMA stuff anyway about Conor McGregor and stuff like that and everything. And I just wanted to see if you were going to give any love for the ladies, because there's a vicious fighter out in Brazil that needs to come here and fight the girls here and just show them how bad she is. Gabby Garcia, have you seen her or heard from her at all?
I haven't seen her fight, but I've heard of her, and I've seen her on social media. So, yeah, okay. I'm anxious to see her fight, but I haven't seen her myself.
Do you know if there's any word about her trying to come over and fight here, or is she just staying there because of COVID, or do you know?
I have not heard. I know there are plenty, especially the fights in Fight Island, there are plenty of international fighters that have been in the UFC. Now, they're going back to Vegas, so I don't know if there's as many opportunities for Vegas. But, yeah, I'll look into that, and we'll try to mention it on the show for you.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll have Ron Higgins to talk about LSU. Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.